The sun climbed higher, burning off the gray mist that clung to the pilgrim's road like wet wool, but the cold did not leave the hollow. It stayed in the stone, in the dirt, in the marrow of Ilse's bones. She stood before the second waystone, the one Torvin had struck the day before, and watched the air above it ripple. It was a thin distortion, like heat rising from a summer road, but the air was freezing. The stone was gone. Or rather, the top half of it was gone. The base remained, a jagged stump of gray rock splintered by iron wedges and the brute force of a sledgehammer. Torvin stood 10 paces away. He was a large man, broad in the shoulder and narrow in the face, wearing a livery of dark blue that was too fine for field labor and too coarse for court service. He held a heavy iron mallet in one hand, resting the head on the ground. He did not look at Ilse. He looked at the stump. He looked at the broken pieces of stone scattered in the grass like teeth. "It is done," he said. His voice was flat, bureaucratic. He spoke as if he were reading from a list of chores, checking off a task for the day. "The Baron requires the stone for the new hall. The foundation needs weight." "You cannot take it," she said. Torvin sighed. It was a long, suffering sound, the exhale of a man who had to explain simple things to children or idiots. "I have the Baron's seal, Ilse. I have the steward's writ. You know this. You saw the messenger yesterday." "I saw a thief," she said. Torvin's eyes flicked to her then. They were blue, pale, and watery like the sky before a storm. "I am not a thief. I am the Baron's foreman. I collect what is owed. The land is forfeit, Ilse. The debt is due. The stones are collateral." "The debt is not due for another month," she said. Her voice was steady. She kept her hand on the shard of stone. She could feel the vibration in it, faint but present, a tremor running through the rock like a pulse. "And this stone is not collateral. It is a marker. It marks the road." "The settlement waits until next month," she said, her tone holding firm. Her fingers rested against the cold stone, feeling the faint vibration running through the rock like a pulse. She pressed her palm flat against it, as though steadying it, as though the stone itself might falter. "He did not let it rot," Ilse said. "He protected it." Torvin laughed. It was a short, sharp sound. "Protected it from whom? From the silence? From the thing in the north? Ilse, you are a farmer. You grow wheat. You tend sheep. You do not understand the forces you are playing with. The Baron understands. He knows why the road must be cleared. He knows why the stones must go." Ilse stood up. She brushed the dirt from her knees. She looked at the stump, then at the third waystone, further north, standing tall and unbroken in the mist. Then she looked at Torvin. "No," she said. Torvin stopped smiling. "No. I will not pay you to remove the rest," she said. "And I will not let you take them." Torvin stared at her. For a moment, he looked genuinely surprised. Then his face hardened. The bureaucratic mask slipped, revealing the irritation beneath. "You think you can stop me? With what? A pitchfork? A prayer?" "With the law," Ilse said. She did not believe it. She could not see what law might apply here, in the hollow, on the road that belonged to no one and everyone. But she said it anyway. "There is no law here but the Baron S," Torvin said, "and I am his law." He picked up the mallet again. He tested the weight of it in his hand. "Move aside, Ilse. This is your last chance. I do not wish to harm you. You were your uncle's girl. He was a reasonable man. He understood the necessity of compromise." "He understood nothing," Ilse said. "He understood duty." Torvin shook his head. "Duty does not fill a granary. Duty does not keep the roof from leaking. Come now, be sensible. Take the coin I offered you. Take the 50 crowns. Go to the city, buy a shop. Live comfortably. Why die for a pile of rocks?" Ilse looked at the 50 crowns lying on the stump of the waystone. They glinted in the sunlight, bright and yellow and utterly worthless. Her uncle's face surfaced in her mind, then the ledger, thick with entries, the dates, the names of travelers who had passed through, and the ones who had not. The silence that followed them north pressed against her thoughts. She thought of Alera. The girl was inside the cottage. She was sleeping. She was warm. She was safe, for now. But the safety was an illusion. The stones held the line. The stones kept the silence at bay. If Torvin took them, if he broke them, if he carried them away to build his lord's hall, then the line would break. And the silence would come. Ilse stepped in front of the stump. She planted her feet in the dirt. She spread her arms. "No," she said. Torvin's expression darkened. "You are making a mistake." I am making a choice, she said. He looked at her for a long moment. Then he looked at the men behind him. There were three of them, young men with spears and shields, wearing the same blue livery. They looked uncomfortable. They looked at their boots. They looked at the ground. They did not look at Ilse. Take her, Torvin said. The men moved forward. Ilse did not move. She stood her ground. She looked at the nearest man, a boy with a scar on his chin. She looked him in the eye. Do you know why you are here? She asked. The boy hesitated. He looked at Torvin. Torvin did not blink. We are here to clear the road, the boy said. His voice was uncertain. The road is not clear, Ilse said. The road is full of ghosts, and you are walking through them. The boy took a step back. He looked at his companion. The companion looked away. Move, Torvin said. His voice was sharp, commanding. The boy raised his spear. He pointed it at Ilse's chest. Ilse did not flinch. She looked at the tip of the spear. It was iron. Sharp, deadly, she looked at the boy's hand. It was shaking. If you strike me, she said, you strike the road, and the road will strike back. Torvin stepped forward. He grabbed the boy's arm and pushed him aside. Enough talk. She is obstinate. She is foolish. Bind her. Tie her to the post at the farm. Leave her there until she comes to her senses. We will finish the work. Two men moved toward her. Ilse did not wait. She turned and ran. She ran toward the cottage. She ran across the yard. She ran up the steps and through the door. She slammed it shut and threw the bolt. She leaned against the wood, breathing hard. Her heart hammered against her ribs. She could hear them outside. She could hear their boots on the gravel. She could hear Torvin's voice calling her name. Come out, Ilse, there is no use. She did not answer. She moved to the window. She looked out. The men were standing in the yard. They were waiting. Torvin was pacing. He looked up at the window. He knew she was watching. He smiled. A cold, thin smile. Ilse turned away. She walked to the table. She picked up the shard of stone she had taken from the stump. She held it in her hand. It was cold, solid, patient. She went to the door. She opened it. She stepped outside. The men turned. Torvin stopped pacing. Ilse walked toward them. She held the shard of stone in front of her, like a shield. I am not going back inside, she said. Torvin frowned. You are tired, you are hungry, you are afraid. I am awake, Ilse said. For the first time in 7 years, I am awake. She stood in front of the cottage door. She stood between the men and the house. She stood between the road and the farm. She stood between the past and the future. Take me, she said, but you will not pass. Torvin looked at her. He looked at the shard of stone in her hand. He looked at the third waystone, standing tall in the distance. He looked at the sky. The clouds were gathering. The light was fading. He signaled to his men. They lowered their spears. They did not move forward. Very well, Torvin said. We will wait. The night is coming. The cold is coming. And so is the silence. Let us see how long you can stand against it. Ilse did not answer. She stood her ground. She held the stone. She waited. The wind picked up. It carried the smell of snow. It carried the sound of the hollow. The stones hummed, low, constant, fraying at the edges, but there. Ilse closed her eyes. The silence pressed against her lids. Her uncle's voice rose from the dark, the ledger's heavy pages, the names inked in dry strokes, the cold certainty of a man who turned away the world. She opened her eyes. She looked at Torvin. You can wait, she said, but the road does not. Torvin did not respond. He turned his back on her. He walked back to his men. He ordered them to make camp. They built a fire. They cooked their meal. They drank wine. They laughed. Ilse stayed by the door. She stayed in the cold. She stayed awake. Night fell. The stars came out. The moon rose, pale and thin, casting long shadows across the yard. The fire crackled. The men slept. Torvin sat by the fire, watching her. He did not sleep. Ilse did not sleep either. She held the shard of stone. She felt its coldness. She felt its weight. She felt its patience. Alara's fever burned hot. The medicine lay empty. The city waited miles away, and the risk hung heavy in the cold air. She thought of the road. She thought of the stones. She thought of the silence. She thought of the thing in the north. She could not tell what it was, nor what it sought, but she knew one thing. It was coming. And she was the only one who could stop it. Or so she hoped. The wind howled, the stones hummed, The night was long. Ill stood, she waited, she watched. And she prayed. Not to any god she knew, not to the saints in the church, but to the road, to the stones, to the memory of her uncle. Let me be strong, let me be right, let me be enough. The wind died down, the hum grew louder, the stones sang. Ilse listened, she heard the song, she understood it. It was a warning, it was a plea, it was a promise. It held fast, it said, it held fast. She held fast. The dawn came, gray and thin, failing to push back the heavy mist. Ilse was still standing, her legs were numb, her hands were frozen, but she was standing. Torvin looked at her, he looked tired, he looked uncertain. You are mad, he said. I am alive, Ilse said. He shook his head, he signaled to his men, they packed their gear, they mounted their horses, they turned south. They left her there. Alone. With the stones. With the silence. With the road. Ilse watched them go, she watched the dust settle, she watched the mist return. She turned back to the cottage, she opened the door, she went inside. Alara was awake, she was sitting on the bed, she was looking at the fire. Mama, she said, who was that man? Ilse walked to the bed, she kissed her daughter's forehead, she felt the heat, she felt the fear. That was a thief, she said, and he is gone. Will he come back? No, Ilse said, not today. But tomorrow. Ilse looked at the window, she looked at the road. She looked at the waystone, standing tall in the mist. Maybe, she said, but I will be ready. Alara nodded, she believed her, or she wanted to. Ilse went to the table, she put the shard of stone on it, she picked up her uncle's ledger, she opened it. She looked at the entries, she looked at the names. She began to write. Today, she wrote, today the foreman came. Today he tried to take the stone, today I refused. She paused, she looked at the door, she looked at the road. Tomorrow, she wrote, tomorrow I will walk the road. Tomorrow I will find the medicine. Tomorrow I will save my daughter. She closed the ledger, she set it down, she stood up. She was ready.